I know we talked about this on the podcast last time, but that guy, I think we talked about it right at the end of the podcast, so we had to cut ourselves off. But that guy that we submitted a video competition for, for the yes. context, if this becomes part of the podcast, I just want to make sure that I'm also recounting it correctly. But sure. Basically, we put out a cover of We Are Young, right? It was the We Are Young one.
Yes, that's the one we used for that.
Yeah, we did an acoustic cover of We Are Young by Fun, and which actually, let me come
still
back.
Out there, isn't it?
I think so. I don't think I deleted anything off of that channel. But I do actually want to come back to Fun as well, because Fun is out of Traverse City. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we did a cover of We Are Young by Fun, and then one of the comments on that video was like, wow, this is a really good cover. He said something about having like a competition series or something. Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't exactly remember the context, but yeah, the comment was something like, I would like to feature this on this like cover competition series or something, right, that he had.
Which he had. Like, we
yeah,
looked.
No, we looked at the videos, they were there.
Yeah.
And it was like, a real channel.
Yeah, and this was, you know, 2012 maybe? 2013?
Yeah, because we would have recorded that round of covers right before I went for college, right?
It was right when I lost a substantial amount of weight. So that had to be, yeah, I think so.
Because those are the ones we did on like the back patio the of back my patio. Parents' house.
Yep. And I think and in one of them, go ahead.
Well, there was one where I remember the neighbor like pulled up into his driveway and was like listening for a second.
Yep.
And then there was definitely another one. I can't remember if it was We Are Young or if it was one of the others, where I had like a mosquito on my arm for
exactly.
like half the song.
Yes.
And like in the video, I'm looking down at it all the time.
But I also remember you telling me personally a story that like, instead of trying to like flick it off or something, you were just trying to like flex and flood him, like make him pop. Cause that's the only way you can really get rid of those things.
Right. If I couldn't get my other arm over there and like pinch it.
Which is funny. Cause like we weren't doing it live and it happened very early in the beginning of the video. So like we could have just stopped.
It's one of those things that, like, you do this kind of production and music stuff more, and you're like, just get another take.
Yeah, just, exactly. Just, rather than,
like, it was not that important. Do another take.
It all just felt so on the line, you know, because, like, I mean, it wasn't brand new, but the idea of being a YouTuber or getting found on YouTube was, like, still a dime a dozen.
It was a
like,
whole different world in exactly. 2012, 2013.
So the idea of us being reached out to rather than putting ourselves out, somebody was like, this is great. Let's air it. I'd like to put this on my channel as basically a competition where we put two covers back to back and you vote on who you liked. And then there's a tournament and then whatever. And we watched a bunch of his videos. I remember enjoying his content. I remember like being very impressed and like excited about it. And that was it. We submitted
it. Yeah, no, like we gave permission to use the video we made, and the thought was that we would end up in a video on his channel with somebody else doing a different cover, or
right.
I don't, maybe it was a cover of the same song. I don't know if that's how it was supposed to work, but yeah, just like we were like, yep, and then nothing.
Yep.
We never appeared on that channel, to my knowledge.
Nope. And I think we just did the one. I think we did the one batch of covers where we did like four or five in a session, and then the only other acoustic cover we ever put out was that cover in front of my house. It was like a Taylor Swift song, right?
Yeah, we did "Safe and Sound" there.
Safe and
there
Sound.
There was like two more that we did in the living room of your parents' old house.
Oh yeah, one of them was Boxing Day.
Because I remember that's when we did Boxing Day. I don't remember what the other one was.
Me either, but I feel like I remember yawning in it and being annoyed with myself about that. But it wasn't even a yawn. It was like one of those yawns where you kind of just like tense up your face and don't let yourself open it all the way because you don't want to be seen. So I remember seeing my face go like and being really annoyed with that. But we still uploaded it. We didn't do another take or anything like that. What could that have been?
We had I remember the Taylor Swift one at one point sounds cool when we're starting it because
it
there's like birds singing and stuff. But then at one point the wind picks up and just like completely kills it for a second.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like any other like collaborative music that we put out publicly. Cause I think beyond that, it was just LFT stuff, right?
I think so.
Which
as far as like actual put out. Yeah.
I said we were going to talk about fun. Fuck it. They're from Traverse City. That's all, I guess. That was all I was really going to say.
That's extra crazy for me because, like, my favorite fun fact
is, about fun?
Right?
Okay.
That I like to throw out to people is that when they first got real popular, I was like, wow, this is good. This guy sounds like the lead singer of The Format. Because that was the lead singer of Fun's band before that.
Oh.
They had a song that was on like VH1 or something that I saw when I was a kid that I really liked.
And the voice just stood
so,
out?
Like, yeah. And when I heard him again, I was like, this sounds like that guy. And I found out later it was. And I had my cool, like, I knew him before moment.
I wonder if you found him from like local targeting or was it VH1? Did you say it's VH1?
I think it was. I pretty much remember that this was from the era where.
We watched music videos.
Yeah, like it was the before school, like it would be on the TV, VH1 would be, and I would see like whatever music videos were playing at that time. I think it was from then, but yeah. I mean, I saw a lot of songs that way, I couldn't be sure.
It's very possible that I'm mixing a handful of facts. It could be that some of them are from Traverse City, not all of them, but definitely some, if not most, were from Traverse City. Because I remember when I worked at Interlochen, the guitarist, somebody from the band, it was like fresh, they were freshly broken up, but he was talking all about how they performed with Queen at one point. And so he was like telling me that, but like, who's the lead singer of Fun? Do you remember his name? Is it Adam something?
I want to say Nate something, but I don't know the last name.
That sounds right. But like, yeah, all of the band, sans Freddie Mercury, of course, did some type of like huge arena performance and Fun played with them. So I asked him a whole bunch of questions and then he basically said like, yeah, you know, just growing up around here in Traverse City and then to be playing with Queen is like, whoa, hang on, what? And then
you said what? You grew up where?
And now my buddy, John Paul, who does constant acoustic perform or live acoustic performances. He's like, yeah, I used to play with him. Used to play with them all the time. So, oh, I guess you never.
That's crazy.
I don't know. When I think about how small of a town we come from, the idea of being any degrees away from anyone with some sort of notoriety still, like, how? I mean, even knowing John, like we've talked about multiple times, it's like, how?
Right, yeah.
How do we grow up with this kid while he's touring the world now in, like, one of the biggest rock bands in the world, you know? All right, y'all. If you're watching the video version, see that skull? See this? This is not a punk house, it's a punk home banner. All of these things are available at catandcrew.com. That's right, they're the first sponsors. Catandcrew.com. Enter the promo code Monday, it's Monday, M-U-N-D-A-Y, to receive 10% off of your final purchase. You can get those koozies, you can get banners, you can get earrings, you can get coasters, you can get skull planters, you can get so many cool punk adjacent type things and stuff. This is a dynamite selling point for their website. But yeah, I think it's really cool that they decided to give ADHD Deep Dive listeners an exclusive deal. Because, you know, it's cool that we're building a little audience here and that you guys get to have some sort of special perks that nobody else gets. So if you aren't familiar with it yet, go to catandcrew.com, enter the promo code Monday, M-U-N-D-A-Y at checkout, get 10% off your final order. Okay, back to the show. Kind of a pivot back to the acoustic-y stuff, because we're going to get into talking about, of course, LFT, Live for Tomorrow, and Midwest Guys, as we did last time around, except now we have some more important news to update people about, those who don't know.
Right.
But since we were talking about kind of doing the covers and some of the stuff outside of Live for Tomorrow, have you, like, ever considered not by stepping away from Live for Tomorrow, but by expressing yourself a little more independently, like just going back to your roots and writing some like acoustic-y type stuff to do some solo performing again? Or are you trying to keep your focus on LFT right now?
It's definitely something we've talked about kind of within and without the band, sort of.
Because you guys have done acoustic performances as the band.
Yeah, we just recently did... the Tap House here in Lake City
for the class reunion
towards the end of June. And I mean, the class reunion people, there was only a few of them there at that point, but the Tap House was pretty full, so we still had a nice crowd. And the funniest thing, man, there's these girls sitting at a table right in front of us like right next to where we set up, and we start playing December by Neck Deep, and I'm like, this will be a good jam, but like no one will know this song. And this girl just starts like, oh yeah, singing yeah. right along with it.
Hell yeah.
They left right after that, and I was like, what are you doing? Stay.
We'll play more Neck Deep, just please.
But like, yeah, no, it was really fun to do that, and like it was a different setup for everything, really, because I was doing a lot more of like leading in practice, especially because we were gonna have two guitars for it, but then Eddie had something going on, and so I was the only guitar. And this was kind of the idea anyway, is we wanted to sort of set it up where we could do some kind of like plug and play yep. around me kind yep. of thing. So like as long as we had like me and my acoustic guitar could be the whole thing if we needed it to be, but also like Travis can jump in on like the lap cajon, or he's got shakers and stuff now and a tambourine. Nick playing bass on some stuff was really fun, because we were able to do we did Circles by Post Malone at Hell the Tap yeah. House.
How'd that
and,
go over?
Yeah, so like, oh, it's awesome.
I'm sure.
It was really fun because the guitar part is so boring. I've like never played that song by myself. It's really bass driven. And okay. so having the bass and the cajon for that one. So it's a weird answer to the question, maybe, but like it's that I have considered, and we have talked about even within the band, you know, me doing some acoustic stuff or bringing in a couple other people from the band to also do that.
Sure. And one of the things that I'm learning, even just by talking to John as well, is that like people are involved in the writing process and the recording process that aren't always involved in the performing process, or vice versa. So it's like, as long as
John's done a ton of that.
Exactly. And just as long as music is the medium in which to express yourself, it doesn't really matter how you're doing it, as long as it's part of, you know, making you a better artist for the band, right?
So and that's, I really love the kind of free way that we're looking at it right now. It's just like getting out there and playing is good. We should be doing that. And yep. if you can jump on an acoustic show that we do, then we'll play it. If not, then maybe it'll be a smaller setup, but we can still go.
Do you think that could become... Because I know that we talked about this a little bit in the last podcast, but I don't really know where it's headed right now, especially since LFT is having a bit of a not a comeback, I guess. I mean, it's your first show in since the pandemic,
it is.
Right?
It pretty much is, yeah.
Yeah.
Other than, yeah, we played some smaller like private party stuff would have been right. between now and then.
So, okay.
So first big one.
Fuck it. Let's stop talking around it, I guess. I was going to try to leave this as the tag, but... How do I set this up delicately, because you know I've got to fill some content here. Okay, so many moons.
Well, I mean, I think we talked about it in the last podcast.
We
did. Possibility of one day.
Of one day, exactly. But we didn't know there were no plans that this would be the way that it went down for sure. So
cool.
For those who didn't hear the last podcast or aren't familiar with my relationship with Ethan, we were in a band together for however long it was until I quit. And
started a band together.
Started really? A band. You're right. I always forget to throw that word out there. Even though it matters to me, I just assume people are like, I don't know.
I think it does matter when it's changed around as many times as it has.
Sure. Instead of being in a band, started this band that has now continued with a different lineup, somewhat. Added, subtracted, whatever.
It's been a whole thing.
Along that journey, we met a band called Midwest Skies, of which I am now in. And for the first time since that show, and for the first time since I left Live for Tomorrow, not only will Live for Tomorrow and Midwest Skies be on the stage again together, but it will, again, yeah, be that first time that I will have ever been adjacent to you guys since I quit
right,
on stage. Yeah. So there's some history being capped off in the show. And yeah, on the last episode, we were like, you know, it would be so cool now that we're all patching up our friendships and like kind of coming back to this like mutual understanding of like music and love and friendship is the more important thing. I didn't think it was going to happen this soon.
No, I mean, we weren't really being super active on stuff. We've been trying to get some more things going this year. And the way that this was able to play out with Nick kind of getting the ability to put something together, it's just perfect.
I might know just as much as you do, and I don't, that's not much, but do you know how, do you want to talk about how the show kind of came to be?
I only know so much. I know obviously if you look at the flyer and promotional stuff that's out
Yes.
there, it's opening for a new location of Northwoods Tattoo up in
Correct.
Traverse City. And yeah, Nick was, I think he's basically got kind of hired, I don't know, to put on a show for
Yeah.
this opening.
I'll give the little bit of Northwoods context. So Nick currently works as a piercer at a different piercing and tattoo shop. His partner, Sabrina, works at Northwoods Tattoo, which is currently about to not rebrand, but have a grand reopening with a new venue. And they're trying to put on like a big party type thing. My understanding, I'm gonna beep this whole sentence if I can't say it, because I'll ask him if.
I think you might be saying a sentence that I just avoided, so
My
go ahead.
understanding is that Nick will be a part of Northwood's Tattoo at some point. And if that whole sentence was beeped, the most important part is Nick, yes, was tasked with putting together essentially the lineup for this event, just because all of the other factors unrelated. He's in a band. He knows lots of artists in the area, and he's put on events like this before. So he was tasked. I think there's going to be like freaking what? Do you know the details about the rest of the event beyond the performance side of it?
There was some stuff on the flyer. I know they're doing like some tattoo raffles and
Yes.
things like that, and some of those kind of things. So like they're trying to get people out there for stuff. But I don't know a lot about other than that.
I would really like to see. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but like the atmosphere of what this event is shaping up to be would be really cool to have some sort of like, I don't know, skate atmosphere around there. Like, I don't know if there's like skate competitions or anything like that, but the atmosphere is like, let's get all these alt people together because of the reopening of a popular tattoo shop. Or the grand reopening of a popular tattoo shop. And then let's also have three big bands from the different parts of Michigan play the show.
Yeah.
So we've got Live for Tomorrow, Midwest Skies, and Your Old Friends As We Divide.
Which was a really cool random little addition.
Yeah, how did that, because I've only peripherally known about them. I think that they were like in and out of Nick's house while I was gone or something like that, and I just missed them. But I know
Oh
they're
yeah.
good friends of your guys's musically, correct?
Oh yeah, super cool dudes. We I'm not gonna remember what year this was now. But when we
Pre-pandemic, I want to
did,
say 2018, 2019.
yeah, 2018 might be it. But yeah, definitely
Okay.
pre-pandemic. We did
Yep.
a weekend tour where we hit Chicago, Detroit, and Indianapolis in 3 days.
Fuck yeah.
And so Chicago was the first leg. We came over to Detroit after we finished that show. And As We Divide out of the Detroit area was one of the bands that was on the show we were playing in Allen Park, just outside of Detroit.
So you met them at that show.
Yes, yeah, or we were kind of talking to them in the lead up to it and everything, because we had listened to some of each other's stuff and was like, oh, it's good stuff kind of thing. They were a little bit on the heavier side of the like kind of 80s yard metalcore kind of sound.
Okay.
And so like it sounded like a little bit maybe of a heavier version of us. So like when we would do a heavy song on an EP or an album, theirs was like a lot of that. And so it was kind of a cool connection there. And we talked to him a bit. We were figuring out what we wanted to do for like a sleeping situation before we took off and we're going to Indianapolis the next day, 'cause it wasn't a super far drive.
Right.
They actually rented a practice space at that time. I forget what the place was called, like the Hive or something like that in the
Cool.
Detroit area, where it literally was just this kind of like, imagine almost like a storage unit area, but the storage units were just rooms where bands and artists can play and practice at whatever hour is
That's
like open 24/7.
quick ADHD aside. Can you do that in a storage unit? If you like rent one of the big storage units,
You know,
there's
I don't
always
know.
noise and stuff. Can I rent it and play music in there? Like, could I shoot a music video inside a storage unit?
I mean, I think especially for like that short term, I don't think that would be hard to get by. I think you probably could.
Even like playing loudly?
Maybe. I mean, it's definitely not usually a place where they're thinking people are like hanging out, I don't think.
Right. Interesting. Okay, sorry, go on.
No, that would be a good location for
That
something.
sparks some creativity here. Like, and I'm just imagining somebody like, maybe I'm giving this away, but somebody like just walk, they got kicked out of their house or something like that. And as they're like opening up a storage unit to like put their shit in there, the band's already playing like in the storage unit and they have to like
That's
move them
cool.
out of the way.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, all right. Annoyed I said that out loud. Maybe I put that into the public. Who else is making
You
music
know,
videos that listen to this
you
fucking
just
podcast?
yank it right out of here if
Yeah,
you want to.
okay. So storage unit.
Yeah, so it pretty much is like that. They were just a little bit nicer. They're carpeted and like locked up for everybody to keep their equipment in and stuff. And basically they were like, we got this, that it's open 24/7. We can go there after the show and you guys can like crash out there for the night.
Fuck yeah.
And we're like, all right. I mean, yeah, man, we don't know you guys, but like that's super cool.
You've
We had a
given us a
great
place
time
to
hanging
stay?
out with them
Sweet.
at the show.
Yeah.
So yeah, we just went over there and we hung out for a long time that night, and then it was just like everybody sleeping on the floor and on beanbag chairs and stuff before we got on the road to Indy. So that was our first time meeting them.
Nothing more punk.
And yeah, we did a couple of other shows with them. One time, we played in Fort Wayne in Indiana. So they were on that show too, and we got a hotel room together, and that was a really fun time for that weekend. And so that all was a while back, and now we just talk to him sometimes and whatever. Fast forward to when we start not actually promoting the show, but doing those little like pre-hype posts, especially because we haven't been active in a long time.
Yep.
So like one day Nick just posts like the hand wave emoji on the band page. Then we just had that. And so, you get people that are like, oh,
Ooh,
what's
what's happening? They
happening? What are
changed
they
their picture
doing?
black. The cover photo's black.
It's
What are
that.
they doing?
Yes, it's that.
Yeah.
And so then we did one more post before the actual flyer came out where we like posted a really pixelated version of it and just said, see you tomorrow.
Dope.
And on that, as we divide, actually commented on that post. And I'm like 90% sure it was their lead singer, Robbie, because like it very much reads as his voice to me. The comment said, and I quote, Lord, I am gonna be one pissed off son of a bitch if we're not on your comeback show.
Hey, well, there you go.
And so I just took a quick screenshot of that. I threw it in the band chat and I was like, wanna see if they wanna drive to Traverse?
Fuck
We were
yeah.
kind of figuring out how we wanted to fill the kind some of the extra time, just because even if we had both of our bands play for an hour a piece, that's only
Yep.
2 hours and that's a lot of time to fill. So we were looking
Yep.
at maybe doing some acoustic or whatever since we've been doing that, but like he commented that, I'm like, man, just put a third band on there,
Fuck
go
yeah.
hard the whole time.
And that gives everybody the opportunity to do really 45 minutes of music and talk. And then, like,
Yeah.
it's kind of our space to go over if we want.
And that's the other thing I love about the fact that like Nick gets to put this whole thing together is it has never felt more like we're just throwing our own show, and that is the coolest thing.
It is so custom curated to how we want to present ourselves. Like, it is a bunch of friends in three different distinct parts of the state. Coming to
Yep.
one central location and playing music amongst people that, A, that we know, but B, are very similar to ourselves. Like, it just,
Yeah, man.
it's so poetic, man. And we talked about, like, yeah, wanting to do this on the first show. And I think, of course, I always knew that it was gonna happen, but it's just how, especially because we are kind of marketing ourselves a little bit differently right now. So the idea of LFT and the Midwest
Sure.
guys being on the same show. Not impossible, it would just have to be like a festival or something like that, you know? And since we get to do it ourselves, we could just fucking do it.
Right, like there's no promoter to convince that the fit is right or
Exactly.
anything like that. Like,
And I think there's already significant, I don't know if, you know, maybe this is ego talking or lack thereof. I don't know if it has anything to do with us, but there is significant hype around the show already. Like, it looks like there's decent, like, what's the word? RSVPs already.
yeah.
I have things that I still want to talk about, but you want to take a question from the listeners, man?
Let's do it.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. Well, two of them are LFT related. One of them is more creative related. Let's start easy. What is a favorite lyric of yours that you've written for Live For Tomorrow? Either one that resonates with you personally. Oh, you had one that came to mind. All right, go ahead.
It's today is an interesting day to do this because going back to
practice.
Because
did you do it yesterday?
We're just kind of, I'm thinking over, remembering some stuff and some of those things. Like,
well, here, as a preamble to yesterday, what you did. Yesterday was your first practice in some time.
That's true. We have not mentioned that. No. Right. We probably haven't had everybody together since we were practicing for like those party shows that I was talking about, smaller scale stuff, like a year or two ago. So it's definitely been a long time since we've been like really trying to be polished and stuff like that. And sure. I said it's all good. Definitely some times where we would have to stop, or you get to a part where you're like, oh, okay, we got to remember how to do this.
Yeah.
But knocking some of that rust off feels nice.
Well, as far as I'll make sure that we definitely get back to this lyric question, but let's just might as well pick up on that a little bit. Were there, yeah. I know last podcast we talked about some of the like more emotional side of what this whole shaping of LFT has come to be like, whether it felt like it was getting away from you or just the changes and the shifts throughout the history of the band.
Mm-hmm.
But do you feel like where you're at as a group right now, and maybe that might be a personal question, depending on what the answer is, do you feel like you're all like solid and on the same page right now?
I do, because there's definitely been since the last time that we had talked on here, some shifts in kind of what we're focused on and what we're looking at in the immediate future. Mm-hmm. Just for a few different reasons, partially our own kind of inability to really seem to get a lot of things moving. At a certain point, you got to look at that as, you know, are we doing the right things for us here if we're having this much trouble with it, you know? Mm-hmm. But then also, yeah, some other circumstances not necessarily in our control, but it came to a point where we were like, okay, we got to look at how can we just like get back out there and be doing stuff again. And I got to beat on the drum that I've a few times over the last couple years of, we got a lot of LFT music that needs to come out.
Thank you.
So let's do that.
Okay.
Because we've recorded stuff that has been sat on for far too long.
I'm so glad that you just said that. Because it's like one of those things I'm privy to, but it's not my business, right? Like, it's not my decision what happens with LFT right now. But as a friend of everyone's involved, and as an egomaniac, I'm like, why the fuck have you sat on content now? I don't think Nick would be too displeased or would disagree if I said that my understanding is a lot of it has to do with this was Nick's decision not to do it, not to put stuff out.
Definitely yet. Some. There is a music video in particular
I know exactly
we are currently looking at.
Yep.
And he actually did. I don't know if he showed you this.
I've seen the re-edit
of it. Looks great. I honestly talked to him a little bit about it before.
Talked to him. I think some of his insecurity was that he didn't know, like, there wasn't a ton of B-roll. A lot of filler stuff.
It's true.
And so I was helping him actually like conceptualize what type of B-roll would look good there. Because I have seen the difference between the old cut and the new cut. And it is already substantially different.
Yes.
But even still, even that first cut, I would have personally been like, what are you doing? Put it out.
Yeah.
We need it out.
It was nowhere near unreleasable or anything crazy like that.
I think I was there for the conversation when I said something like that out loud. I think it was while we were at Nick's shooting the scene from Penelope. I said something like that out loud and Nick's like, yeah, maybe we should just put it out. And I saw your face go like, I've been saying that.
Well, because on the one hand, you're like, yes, let's do that. Let's definitely put it out. On the other hand, it's like, I'm a little frustrated. This is like, why we're getting there now? Now we want to put it out? Like, okay, fine.
It's almost as if better late than never is bullshit.
A little.
It's like, no, I want it now.
And it's better than never because it still needs to be out.
Correct. So in terms of that, I mean, kind of going back to what this practice was like, there were a lot of gaps that you had yet to fill in your understanding of like how this reunion, or not reunion, but this next phase was going to work. A lot of that has to do with unreleased music.
Yeah, I mean, we played through some of it because some of it's stuff that was so done and ready that like it even was in the live set. We had backtracks for it, all that stuff. So like stuff that is very done and in my opinion, really good.
When you were performing it, was it like, here's an unreleased song?
Yeah. It was the last like several big shows that we did, like pre-pandemic, we were working on this music, and actually it was kind of the one thing that we really did that was fun and cool when the pandemic happened was one of these songs, Hard Mode,
was the music video.
Not our most recently released song now, but the one before that. A whole batch of songs kind of in the vein of Hard Mode written around the same time and, you know, same mix and feel and all that stuff. There's like four more of those that like are finished, done. One of them has a music video that you've seen. Like there's stuff that's almost ready. I can definitely also understand wanting to do some more things with it. Like we've talked about with the music video, and you were mentioning like adding a little bit more to that in terms of like some B-roll would make it nicer. It's one of those things that I have to stop myself a little bit, pump the brakes a little bit, because I have been that guy that's been like, let's drop something and not say anything. Let's just put it all out and just be like, here it is, deal with it. And now that we are looking at, that was also when we were looking at maybe musically things going in a different direction somewhat.
Yeah, I want to ask.
And so I wanted to just like get it out if it's not going to be pursued. But now that we are kind of maybe more looking at pursuing more of that stuff, I do want to make sure that we make it what we want when we put it out. I think it's a lot closer to ready than maybe some people have. But
well, then
we're all coming around to that opinion, I think.
What I want to ask then is that did that potential rebranding have a lot to do with why nothing came out in the first place? Because you're like, well, we sat on this stuff. Now we're not even heading this direction creatively, so we might as well just table it and move on to the next thing. Or was it like...
That was sort of the overall decision. Yeah, it was like, well, we're working on this other stuff that's sounding a little bit different. And maybe if that's what we want to pursue, maybe this stuff shouldn't be like the freshest thing in people's minds from us, or however you want to look at that. And I got that definitely when that conversation happened the first time. But we spent a long time working on this new different stuff, and like, it was sounding pretty good. We were figuring some things out. It was an up and down thing, but overall was going pretty decent. And so the farther and farther away we were getting from, you know, when we had been working on that like Hard Mode era stuff, the more I was starting to want to be like, let's just like drop it all.
Yep.
Put it out. And with the shifts we've made recently, kind of going back maybe towards more of that kind of thing, it is something that I do understand we want to take a little more of a measured approach to in a release. But
because I promised, we will get back to that favorite lyric question. But you sparked something in my brain that literally happened yesterday, the day before. I have a friend, George, out in New York City, and he's a very talented horror thriller writer. He does a lot of like science fiction, just writing. Doesn't always put it out as far as like a film goes. But he's got endless amounts of scripts. And so I turned to him for some writing critique and help a lot. And one of the things that I told him about this short film that I'm writing is like, I wrote the whole thing as an outline, but I was like, shoot, I wrote myself into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, have you ever felt like you've written yourself into a corner? Like whether it's a song or just creatively like this, where you're like, well, we have to sound like this. Mm-hmm. So we must try to sound like this. But kind of to cap it off, what he told me was like, well, what are you talking about? There's no such thing as writing yourself into a corner, because until it's out, it's not done. So he's like, you have every opportunity between now and the second it's released to get yourself out of that. So it's like, you're not.
That's true.
You know,
maybe TV show writers can write themselves into a corner, but that might be about it.
Exactly. And especially as a one-off project, it's like, you know, there's no established IP. You know, you don't have to explain something you haven't already explained yet. Right now, you're just writing and conceptualizing it. So it's like, if there's mistakes, of course there is. This is your first pass. You haven't written yourself into a corner. You've just written, and there are things left to write to make it seem more full.
And if it doesn't work and it's not out yet, you can always unwrite it.
Yes, exactly. The eraser. Phenomenal tool. Backspace. Great button. My favorite button. Okay, your favorite lyric.
I think probably what I keep coming back to is there's two kinds, I guess, of things that I'm proud of in some of our stuff. And a lot of it.
Sorry, to be clear, it doesn't even in the question was lyric. My answer to this is going to be like the story I told in a first verse. So like you can just be like whatever message you communicated that you feel most proud about. It can be a lyric if you want it to be. But like.
Hold up.
Womp womp.
I'm going to answer that question now that my.
Now that you're illuminated.
Monitor's light. Here you are back.
Yeah.
Okay. So I definitely the most like heartfelt, true to like my life song that I've ever written for Live for Tomorrow or anything else has been Calling Me Home. The one song on our album that is like an acoustic song that builds into a full band. And that one was the only song on that album that I wrote the whole like chord setup for all of the acoustic lead parts. We had some like adding and stuff in the full band, obviously, but the framework and the bones of that song were all mine, whereas I've definitely been doing a lot of lyric work off of like riffs that like Eddie or Adam have written in the last several years for sure. And so like that was, it was already really personal in that way. Cause we wanted to have, a softer bit, a love song, you know? And so I got to actually sit down and try and like very earnestly write rather than just kind of do, I guess like concept writing where, you know, I'm putting myself in a headspace and telling a story in a certain way where I was like, this has got to actually be about me and what's important to me because I have to write it about the person that I love. And I joke about a lot of the lyrics in that song are about how difficult it was for me to write the song. Because of like, there's stuff in it about how like, rewriting lines and things like that, just because this one actually matters. It has to really be good. So the song is almost also about like my struggle to make a song that felt worth it.
That's self-aware though.
But the chorus of it, I've always really liked, and I love doing references. I love things in my lyrics that are entertaining to me, if only me sometimes, but it's the only song that LFT has done where I have gotten to reference Blink-182.
Yes. Go on.
So the first line of the chorus is you're singing harmony to Blink-182 as we go. It's about driving. Because it's one of the only times that I have very personally connected with a chorus lyric, because it does take me right to that place of, we're driving somewhere, playing my music on the radio. She's a vocal major, now a music teacher. So like she has always liked singing the harmonies because she's an alto.
Sure.
And so like that's probably the one that like takes me to a place the most, because like I can just be there in that line.
Yeah.
The other half of lyrics that I really like when I write is when I'm just like trying to play with words and like fit things in and make it almost like really fast and like rappy almost.
Yeah.
The song Smile for the Trainwreck has some really quick verses that I really like how they came together. Like the message is pretty solid. None of the lines are like, this is the most profound thing I've ever written, but I like how they flow. They play really well. They go really fast. And I was proud of myself for that also being really coherent.
Was the EP slash album, was it named after that song, or was the song named after the album?
I think we named the album first, I believe. I think we decided to work back from that. And most of the songs at that point were just like track number whatever.
Right.
Not a lot of them had names when we were first putting them together. So
Sure.
if I remember right, we got to the album, 'cause I think the conversation came off of a like somebody said something like down with the ship or something like that. And basically that got batted down because it's like nautical titles in a pop punk album, like
Yes.
where white noise can't do it. So I had come up with it, and it was kind of just like, okay, so we can't do a shipwreck. What else?
Sure.
And
Smile for the train wreck.
that's what it came for, is yeah, it was like, okay, so we the train wreck angle, and
So the song doesn't say that specifically.
no, in that song
Okay,
it
okay.
doesn't. There are a couple lines in relating to like let's laugh tonight or whatever, as in the face of this
Right.
oncoming horrible thing. So it's just much more thematic, I guess, than explicitly said.
As far as themes go, I have a personal favorite of mine that hopefully will never see the light of day again. I don't love the way that I sang it personally. It was just kind of like a little garage band demo. But when I was like working out how to be a songwriter, doing my own thing, like when I moved out to New York, I wrote a song called "Let's See a Tragedy," and one of the lyrics was, well, the opening verse was, I'm basically just trying to communicate watching, two actors on a stage. And we're watching them. So I said, see the stage, it's a rage, though I've seen it all before, but can't ignore the poor performance of the leading lord. He looks so bored. He's given up on all his instincts, has to rethink how to resync all that matters for what leads him toward the lady leading him. So I was basically like, the way I was trying to
That's that
communicate.
wordplay stuff that I like for
Exactly,
sure.
like rhyme, 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 slant rhyme, move into the next rhyme, 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 and the whole,
Alliteration.
exactly. But the whole thing is like me alluding to watching this shitty play of this leading lord, like on stage, he looks so bored, like he's given up on all his instincts and he has to rethink how to resync all that matters for him. Like, and then the next verse is all about the leading lady and
Take
how
that
she
to
comes in.
slam poetry thing.
Well, that's exactly I wanted to write it as if I was writing something that like meant something kind of passionately, but also like I tried to write it as if it was just like me. I mean, obviously it was me writing an analogy about how people watched me. Like I viewed my life as a performance and my relationship as a performance and how obvious it was in that particular time that I was like disengaged or unhappy or clearly miserable, but like I gotta keep up looks, right? I gotta keep up the performance, like the show's gotta go on or whatever. And so I was just trying to find ways to be analogous in my lyrics so that I can say what I really wanted to say and not have people go like, are you okay?
Yeah,
Because
no, I
also
get that too.
because I don't want to answer that question because it's not a good answer, so it's like
Yeah.
I'm just gonna write about it. In fact, there was a specific time, God love her, but I in that same vein, I wrote a song. What was it called? Not 3032. Not. Who cares? I can't remember what the song was. Shit. Nope. I have to. Hang on just a second. Let me focus
Yeah,
in.
no, I feel you, dude. I do. I would too.
What the fuck was this song called? Whatever. Either way, the lyric was, I've gone to the river without you. And then in the back, you hear, he's blue, so blue. So the way that I was trying to tell that story is I've gone to New York City. I've done these amazing things, but I'm doing them without you. So I'm still sad. So, like, I've gone to the, we always talked, the song was, we always talked about going to the river. And now I'm at the river, but I'm by myself. And I always thought this would be great, but now I'm alone. So, blah, blah. But my mom thought that the lyric, he's blue, so blue, was like you know, because I was outwardly depressed and I was talking about suicidal tendencies and whatever. But my mom was like, are you foreshadowing what's happening here? Like by saying he's blue, so blue. And you realize, and it's funny to think about, but then you realize in that moment, like, people are listening. People are listening to every word that we say and they're trying to break down every single meaning, just like we do with some lyrics. When sometimes it's like, I don't know, I was just writing and inspiration took me and I followed the creativity.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah. Well, those are favorite lyrics. Look at us go. Hey. okay. All right. That's a good one. Let's go to something completely different. Actually, I might even pick up where you were talking about before. You were talking about this way that, like, when a song is presented to you, it's different from when you start writing from the ground up. And I've kind of compared that to, like, mad gab writing, where it's like, you know, you've given me the context when it comes to, like, music. When the actual instrumentation is written, you give mm-hmm. it to me, I can fill it in with just gibberish.
Sure.
But when I start from the ground up, it's something I'm way more invested in because I'm like, what do I want to say? Let's say it. Rather than like, what is the tone that I'm hearing? Let's match it. You know what I mean?
Right.
How do you like find comparisons in the way that you write? Like, is it easier for you to write from the ground up or receive something and then write?
Honestly, kind of having done it both ways at this point, it's also not usual that like an entire song of ours will be like completely done before I've heard anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that kind of stuff will be like tooling around at Eddie's in his studio and piecing some things together. So often I've still like been there as the riffs are being written and
yep.
put together and whatever. So it doesn't feel like completely divorced from the process or anything like that. And so I do kind of tend to start getting the gears turning and stuff during those processes when we're doing that. But yeah, it ultimately when like, especially when the song order, I guess, for like Calling Me Home was like, we want a love song. We want something with some acoustic stuff. And basically pointed at me and was like, that's you, you're that
yep.
guy. So,
yep.
you know, it was still kind of an assigned thing, but that was definitely the first time of really having to not just try and write something that I thought was good, but try and put something out that like was real and was correct to me and was, you know, artistic. There was just so many more stakes on that in particular.
Sure.
And so ultimately, yeah, I think it comes out in a more personal way for sure. And yeah, it's usually if I have a verse chorus framework or something that I'm trying to get some lyrics down for, I do still try to usually start, you know, with some kind of theme or idea or story. And yeah, you do yeah. kind of have to make sure that that's going to jive with, you know, yeah. the instrumentation that you have. But I do try to start with that kind of overarching topic just to make sure it's gonna at least hang together, even if it's not something that's like super substantial every time.
Sure.
I think that was a big part of the process too, is like the bigger a discography gets and the bigger a back catalog of music gets, the more it's like you want to have those songs that are extremely personal to you and that do make you feel like you really are an artist, because that is some of the peaks of doing this, I think.
Right.
But like a lot of time, especially in like the era of writing for the LFT album, our real focus was like, we want to write some songs that we can just like jam hard to live.
I see.
And our focus was really like, overall on the album, kind of on like, we want to gear up for a live show that's going to be super fun and high energy for us. And a lot of the album was predicated on that. And it's just, yeah, it's a little bit of a different thing.
I wonder if you identify with this, and if, I don't think that we talked about this last time, but I do talk about this often. You know, there's the tropish fear of failure, but I have this fear sort of success, and then kind of what comes next. in that, like, I've put myself out there time and time and time again. Like, I'm not really afraid of falling on my face or embarrassing myself. Like, it's just, you have to in order to start something.
That is the business. Yeah.
Exactly. But what I have is this sort of like, sort of an and then what mentality where, like, okay, let's put it very basic. One video gets, you know, let's say that glory, that I crack a million views, right, on a video. I am so scared to put out the next one because now the next one has something that, like, came before it. It has a predecessor. Everything else that I've done is like, this is my first attempt. I'm new at this. Like, I'm brand new, whatever. Now that I'm, like, established as a thing, I have this fear of following that up with something just as good, because now the fraud isn't just like a, this guy's trying, he's clearly a fraud. Now it's, am I a fluke? Did I have a fluke experience?
Well, and I mean, it's probably true just to say that, you know, being in the position of having an artist or a creative with like one successful thing, you're absolutely in a more dangerous position than someone who really hasn't broken that yet.
Right.
Because, yeah, like you said, you put yourself out there over and over and over again, and if nothing really catches, that means no one's, not like the whole world is looking or anything, right? Yeah. And when you do that thing that does get those eyes on you for real, you know, when that notoriety does come, it's why the sophomore album for like artists is such a big discussion. Cause maybe, you know, you were just throwing whatever at the wall and something stuck. You had this big thing blow up, this album or project or whatever. And now everybody is like, cool, what are you going to do now? And well, it's like, well, I had one really good idea. Do I know I will have two or three or more? And no, and that's the scariest place to be, in that position of like, something has done really well. There are either A, important people, B, a lot of people, or C, all of the above looking at me on this now.
Yep.
And then you know that whatever I come out with next, all of those people are going to see it and have some kind of thoughts and opinion on it.
Well, and see, it's like, maybe this is a terrible analogy, but let's just throw out like two different things here. Let's say bungee jumping and relationships. Okay. Two different things, but the Venn diagram is, I've never bungee jumped, right? But it's a thing that a lot of people have done. And even the people who are really excited about it are like, man, you should try that someday, you know, so be it. Maybe I'll try it, whatever, you know, but them harping me about it that I've never done it before doesn't bother me, because it's like, okay, whatever, I've never done it, I'm not that annoyed. But now relationships, you get in a relationship, well, you've been together for a while, when are you thinking about getting engaged? Well, you've been engaged for a while, when are you thinking about getting married? Oh, now you got married, when are you thinking about having kids? You had a kid, when are you going to have another one? No, now you get this job, what's going on with this job? It's just like the expectations of other people are so annoying that it's like I have my own inner monologue that I'm dealing with that is loud and saying the same shit you're saying, but you're just making me doubt myself. Like,
yeah, man.
Yeah. So it's not just the pursuit of creatives, but yeah, it's like that same creative thing where it's like, okay, I did a thing, people now have expectations placed on me, and that's scarier than being like, yeah, just throwing at the wall and see what sticks.
It's true. So if you put it to that like regular life metaphor, it's kind of like the taking of one step implies to everybody that there are several more specific and exact ones that you will take. And they're just going to, they now feel that they can just like interrogate you on when all of that's going down.
Yep.
As somebody who was in a relationship for about 10 years before I got married, I definitely get that.
That's what I'm saying, man. It's like, it's nobody's business. Even though, yes, I get, even on the creative side, people who are like, when's that next album coming out? Or when are you going to do this next thing? It could be rooted in excitement. Like, I'm happy for you. I want to see you thrive. But also, like, you just got to be really careful the way you talk to people about something they're passionate about, because the one, just one sentence could make them feel insecure or could make them doubt themselves, even if you didn't mean it. Like, there's the most ridiculous, which actually, I think that's a perfect transition to the last, not gonna lie, or NGL Well, not last, but one of the last NGL submissions. What do you doubt about yourself, even though others constantly reassure you? Like, if there is anything, you know, but...
Oh, I mean, I think... We had a short conversation related to this last time we were on here, too, about the maybe inherent imposter syndrome that comes with creative work like music and yeah. stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think that even though I have gotten to a place where just kind of doing music and getting it out there and seeing like some of the reactions, I am still very used to that or whatever. Like, I guess to put it in terms of like a YouTube comment is not the kind of thing that like I have any mental space for or care about at all.
That's great.
On the other hand, when it comes to thinking about like myself and my work as it stacks up to like other artists, you know, either people in my similar position or people that I perceive to be above or below me in terms of accomplishments in that field, I have always doubted exactly where I fit into that. Or because, you know, even if the band, you know, how to put this, so much of my musical identity has been tied to LFT my mm-hmm. whole life. And on one hand, that's absolutely a point of pride that like it's a creative endeavor that I'm still a part of in whatever ways it has changed and all of that stuff.
Sure.
But the fact that it is that, and that's mostly been my experience, there were definitely a lot of years where I would doubt, you know, my necessary like contributions or my fitting into the music scene in the way that I wanted to really be seen, not just only as like an artist around that like people knew or were familiar with the work of, but like somebody that not just like a music listener, I guess, would think was good, but somebody that like other musicians would appreciate as good. I think that's kind of my barometer for my own success in that way. As it's gone on, is like, what do other people that whose opinions I would more respect on music, I guess, sure. you know, feel about that? My artist friends and my musician friends and things like that.
Well, I think it's good that you led with the YouTube thing, because I think there's an instinct to want to assume that you meant the bad comments. But I have found, especially very recently with the short film that we just put out, it's pretty much nothing but a nonstop barrage of good comments. And I'm like, okay, but I don't know you.
So and that's
it. It's hard for me to believe. It's not only is like hard for me to accept it, or let's maybe say it reverse. It's hard for me to believe it. First of all, it's like, you could be a robot. You're probably not, but you could be a robot. But then it's hard for me to accept it. You know, I can find an easy way to be like, well, you're just a this, or, you know, it's just one random comment. Because now I'm at a point where I'm like, when we saw 600 views and a bunch of comments on there, I was like, wow, look at that. Now when I see almost 5,000 views and maybe 100 comments, now I look at the comments in relation to the percentage of views. And I'm like, well, see, if there's 5,000 views and only 100 people commented, that means that there's 4,900 people that thought it was shit and they didn't say anything. And
I'll be that guy to say, like, I watch a good bit of YouTube mm-hmm. on like my PlayStation. I don't mm-hmm. even have the ability to comment on
yep,
shit.
Exactly. And same. I don't comment on YouTube videos. Who
and I don't
that?
Comment on you. And that's the other thing you got to remember. I don't comment on YouTube videos. So like I yep. watch tons of stuff that I think is great and I don't yep. leave a comment. Like,
yep. So that's exactly like kind of what we're talking about though. It's like, who do you place expectations of validation on? It can be yourself, of course. Like the goal is to just improve upon yourself constantly. But like, we're so tribal, right? Like humans innately are very tribal. We want to be part of the group. It's built into our DNA to be accepted as part of the group. Otherwise, we're cast out and eaten by lions. You know what I mean? Like, so just to the need or the desire to be accepted or heard or validated. Just runs.
Especially when you have an industry like filmmaking or like music, where To even be considered a part of that group, there's an accomplishment that like has to happen. You know, like it is a hard thing to break into. And so you get this feeling of like it's like everything is an audition. You know, like you're trying to get yourself to be accepted into this group by maybe like the creatives or the artists that you view as a part of that, and you know, their acceptance would mean a lot to you. But also you do want kind of like the people that aren't in that group to still view you as in that group, you know? You need to appear like that from the outside as well. It's weird like that, but
If I were targeting the punk audience and I had zero audience, right? And I made a song because I wanted to be seen by the punk kids. I would make that song, be seen by the punk kids, and go, "Yeah, but you would say that. You know, you're the same, you know, or it's like whatever, you fit into that." What I want is the people who don't identify with me to validate me. And then when those people validate me, they're like, "Well, you're nothing like me." So it's like, why would I? It's just this constant search for, like, you know, who do I believe? I don't know.
I would say if it's anything, you want to stick with the people that should know if this thing is good, right? For me, it's always been like in that example, if it's the person that I wanted to see the punk music and it's a fan of punk music, I'm gonna be like, okay, you know, I at least expect you to know your stuff relatively, and like at least you like my stuff in comparison to that other stuff you like. That makes me feel like part of that group.
It also, but it translates like deeper than that too. And I'm realizing this happened yesterday in like my personal life. So I don't have a washer or dryer at my apartment. And I have a very dear friend of mine right around the corner who has one, who always is down to let me stop by and do laundry, even if they're not home. And
Very cool.
they offered yesterday, like, do you want to stop by and do some laundry? But I can't take that because I can't take it as like stop being nice to me. You're pitying me. That's what it is to me. And like that is a clear barrier that I've got to get through because it's not just
Sure.
compliments. It's just like the ability to receive love is a skill, you know, rather than like if somebody compliments you, it would be really nice to say thank you or compliment them back, not say, yeah,
Yeah, for
but I
sure.
can't help it. I can't fucking
No,
help it,
and
man.
I do the same thing. You place this context on like whoever it is that's saying this to you, and you decide how much it's worth based on that.
Exactly.
And if it's in relation to something creative, I feel like creators are always not necessarily looking to, but they're immediately ready to take that step to down themselves.
Yes.
Like, so the second you get a comment, and it's a positive comment, but your brain goes, I can poke a hole in that. It does. And that's more of that feeling of not belonging creeping through, I think.
Constantly, time after time, that response is like, you would say that. Of course, you would say that. Because the only people saying it to me directly are the people who love me and care about me. And the people who are saying it on YouTube are the people who, you know, are the fraction of a percentage who comment on YouTube videos. So it's like, oh, you would say that. You know, you're a robot. Sorry, what were you gonna
It's
say?
so funny. It's just so funny how we do that. Because everybody does, I think. You get to a
Yeah.
point where like someone that genuinely means a lot to you and is like one of the most important people in your life tells you something, and you're just like, well, that's exactly what you're supposed to say. You love and care about me.
Exactly.
And like you look back at that situation we here where we're removed from it, you go, yeah,
Yeah, that's
they
why
do.
you asked them because they're the ones whose opinion matter. But also, like, it is just this constant pursuit of outside validation, too, because I'm not getting it up here, so I'm looking for it elsewhere. But even when I get it elsewhere, I dismiss it. So it's like this self-sabotaging nature that, like, not just creatives, but yeah, people in general have. Is that a generational thing that's just baked into us that, like, we are designed to hate ourselves innately? Why is that? I don't, not that you have an answer, but why? I don't know.
Yeah, I was gonna say you probably talk to people that would bring up things about, you know, media portrayals of different things and
social
this
media
idea
culture.
of what success is and what that looks like. And yeah, I think you do have a lot of people nowadays that see a lot more things about what's going on around the world than they ever used to. And it does trigger some feelings in people of like things that maybe they should be doing, but they're not, or successes that they haven't achieved that other people have, in a way that definitely generations before us just did not have shoved in their face like that.
I actually saw, I don't remember whose podcast it was, but somebody was talking about like how media has kind of evolved as a genre. And when radio was happening, of course, there were becoming radio personalities at the onset. And then when television came out, radio people were thinking that television was a fad. And then when television and started turning into rather just movies, and like movies were just a one-off because you can't do long-form television. And then it's just this constant doubt of like, yeah, but the next thing that comes isn't as good as the thing that was previously. So this fear of success is also tying into this like self-doubt of like the world can't evolve because I can't see beyond what's happening. Whatever. And it's just this, we're all doing it is the main thing. We're all
Really
doing
though,
it.
it looks different on different people, but I think at a base level, it's there.
I have three more things that I want to touch on before I get you out of here.
Yeah.
This is the official last NGL thing, but I think it's, I want to know too. This will be the last direct thing about LFT before we plug the show one more time. But if you could relive one Live for Tomorrow highlight, what would it be and why?
Ooh. Ooh. See, now the choosing one is the part that would be that's it feels like you're asking me to kill several of my other children. Because
Put them down.
I said when I had posted about the show recently and just kind of reflecting on everybody that's going to be there that like this really being in this band while like sometimes it gives me an identity crisis to think that like this band is so much of my musical identity. On the other hand, being a part of it has taken me through so many different amazing things. And so if, all right, cool. If I was to try and just think about like what was one night that I would love to just kind of live in again above any of the others. It might be the New Year's show that we threw at Streeters not too long before the pandemic. Because that I didn't mention it earlier, but when we were talking about how this show in September is very much us getting to kind of put one together, at least via Nick getting to do that. That show almost felt like that because we had built up a pretty good relationship with Doug, who owns Streeters, after playing a few shows there. And what we were able to do was kind of organize this ourselves through him. We got to be the headlining act and pick the other bands that were on there and stuff. And we got to be up there at midnight and do like the countdown, and there was a champagne toast. We like dressed up and there was masquerade masks and like it was one of the first times that it felt like we really put something together. And just to be in that big huge venue, like I miss Ground Zero for what it was. It was such a awesome stage and venue, and to have it all decked out like that, and like we literally counted down the new year. We did the champagne toast real fast. And then, without saying a word, we hit the Drake and Josh cover for the first time live, right after midnight, and that is probably the singular moment, if I had to pick one of those. But the other thing with that show is actually it is the first and only time to date that we played "Calling Me Home" live, and so I got to intro that, and I got to Kayla was there for that show, so I got to see her in the crowd while we played that song for the first time live. That's If you're making me put down all of my other children, that's the one I have to keep alive.
It is at this point in the podcast that I regret to inform you that my big, dumb, stupid face accidentally unplugged the microphone. So for the next 10 minutes or so, my audio is going to sound like, doo-doo. Let's use doo-doo. But I'll see you in 10 minutes when my audio sounds better. Bye!
Which I am, to be clear. I did want you to put the other memories down. Because, like, you know, the people asked. But also, like, you know, there could be eras of memories. You know, the band has evolved with your own life, so to be able to just pick one, yeah, is...
Yeah, no, that's super hard.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there was a time in my life where I would have said the Hawthorne Heights show where we met,
Midwest guys.
Like, and that's still so high up there.
You know? Of course. I mean, that directly led to why I'm where I am. So these memories can exist and be sweet and not have to be, like, the peak. This one, we might have to dance around. But I've wanted to talk about this for years. Years. Okay. So, upon finishing Penelope, Nikolai told me that, this as an aside, you might be interested in, like, helping write a project someday.
I had mentioned to him when he was filming at Willow that, like, it had occurred to me recently that I would be interested in some writing projects that are a little bit more just straight up storytelling. Because obviously a song is a very specific kind of writing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always allow for, like, complete creative freedom as other forms of storytelling do.
Right.
And so I have been thinking I've been interested in doing some kind of more long form writing just as a different kind of exercise.
Okay. Where do you think I'm going with this conversation?
I mean, I'd hope something's in mind, but, like, what do you got?
Of Gibson and Black.
Oh, yeah.
I might get emotional while talking about this, because...
So how do you want to dive into that one? Because, yeah.
Well, let me tell you that I never stopped. I never stopped working out of Gibson and Black. Yeah. It has been the only thing that I have worked on and never stopped of that type of scale. So much has changed about the story innately that I'd actually like to talk to you about off camera.
Oh, sure.
But
I'm very interested because, like, it's absolutely something that I have thought of time and again, but, like, definitely no, like, real creative work on it. So I would be very interested to see what that looks like after all that time.
I've got chills right now thinking about how... So let me set up some context. Right before you left for college, or maybe it was, like, on your first visit back from college.
Around that time, early college for me, for sure.
I think you and I both started to think about what we wanted, how we wanted to express ourselves creatively outside of being in a punk band or a metal adjacent band. And so we had just a random one-off creative session where we were like, wouldn't it be cool for us to write, I don't know, a script, a movie, an idea, something? And I'll talk a little bit about what the ideal was, because I'm also curious about what your memories of this are. But also, like, it would not be nice to keep some of this close to the chest. I don't know what will happen with this.
Well, that's true, yeah.
I have no idea. Hang on, move this back just a wee little bit. All right. Okay. Maybe the creative session itself doesn't matter as much as what the context was, but my memory of the creative session was just us sitting down in your parents' basement until, like, 6 in the morning, just going back and forth about what a story would look like if we told a story about two authors.
Yes. Yep.
Do you remember any more context beyond that?
Yeah. So I remember kind of the basic the basic, at least early journey that we wanted to take it on, where the idea was we see them at the beginning, both struggling, you know, getting by and that kind of thing. And then as the movie would progress, one of them would see a significant amount of success and become very popular. I don't know, possibly through like optioning for a movie or something like that. I forget how we did that. But the other one did not and had had gone down a pretty like self-destructive path related to that. I believe, if I remember correctly, I'm going to make sure I get this right. Because we also did have some pretty specific talks about the end. And so I believe that we had the ultimately the one who did not ever find that success taking his own life or dying in some way. I don't remember if it was suicide or not. But he died, that I remember, because I very clearly remember talking about like a cemetery funeral scene that would probably end it. And however it would be conveyed, the idea ultimately would be that like the best time was actually that time when you thought you were waiting for the good thing to happen. And then the credits start and run down by vacant fields.
Yes! Yes!
Had to get that in there.
I'm constantly playing it in my head because it's just there's nothing has fit more. And I don't know if I ever told you that I reached out to them.
You did, yeah. Yeah.
And they so gave like, me they're huge. They got one of their songs got purchased for like $5 million by Ford for a truck commercial.
What?
And so I was asking, like, there's one specific scene where I wanted to use that song, where I was like, that's influencing that song. Not Rundown, but this specific song. And so I messaged them. Well, the song's called Peppermint Tongue. And so I messaged them, and I was like, man, it's been way too long. This idea has been in my brain for years and years and years, and I've never reached out to you to A, thank you for inspiring it, because I think Vacant Fields, like, that's Rundown, I think, inspired the mood of the film. Because if you also remember, we also had Falling Awake by Gary Jules.
Yes. Yep.
Yep. These, and we were like building, you know, it was very Bill Lawrence-esque. We were trying to build a nice soundtrack to hurt people's feelings when they watch our story. And main thing, they said that one got used for a truck commercial, but we could use Rundown because it's open now. I'm so surprised at how much, even though I've changed so much, Ethan, so much, pretty much everything you said is still pretty relevant. To be clear, that is not how the movie ends anymore. Well, at least I've, you know, it's not done. I haven't written myself into a corner, right?
Okay, it's not out, is it?
It's not out. And there has always been the expectation that I would really like to have you on this project. Like, it couldn't be. But the story became so much about two people in general, and I'll beep the first person's name, but it became about my friend and you. And, like, the character of Jeremy Gibson became a fusion, or the relationship between Alex Black and Jeremy Gibson, the two main characters in the story, became analogous to my relationship with you.
Interesting.
Also, very quick thing. I'm gonna explode. Hang on a second.
Okay, so my camera was definitely going to be able to record audio, but that small chunk of when I switched the battery to now, this microphone wasn't plugged in. So,
sick.
So I'm getting angry. Let's refocus my attention. Oh, okay. So then, basically, yes, we wrote the story about two authors. One struggled, one didn't. I will tell you what you got wrong in just a second about that story. But again, that so far, that's not the story right now anyways. But yeah, it became like, especially when I left Live for Tomorrow, it became the only thing I had creatively, where it wasn't just like an idea, like a short film idea.
I just remembered what I got wrong, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well,
Huh?
What do you think? Tell me, what do you think?
We had it. I flipped it in terms of who went where at the end, because that was, I think I almost remember that being the talk that like the more predictable story would have been what I just misremembered.
Correct.
And the better way to go ultimately would be having the more successful one find zero satisfaction in it.
Yep.
And him being the one ultimately that loses everything.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you just remember that. Yeah, that was kind of crucial, because I think part of the story that we were telling back then that we didn't even know was really true is that success ain't everything, bro. Like, we wrote a story about, wouldn't it be crazy if we made a twist where the famous guy was unhappy? Yeah, that's extremely possible. And not even just possible, it's extremely likely and relatable. Yeah. That this person who experienced the highest peaks of success, just like this freaking note I put about fear of success, he had nothing to follow it up. Okay? So let me tell you where the story has differed a little bit, and then I'll kind of stop up against the line of comfortability, because I still want this project to continue, and I'd rather talk to you about this on off air.
Sure.
The quote-unquote corners that I was writing myself into were the author's thing. I couldn't relate less. I'm not an author. I don't know what it's like to be an author, to try to sell a book, to get into the publishing world.
That is something
world.
That I've thought about in the aftermath of this, too, is like it would have needed a lot more research into like how does that world work.
Yep. So the most important shift, probably the most important shift, was making them just video creators, like I was when I was younger. It's just like I used to make little skits and sketches, but they are still best friends who have the same shared goal, but they make films. And now they're starting to make short films. And so their pursuit is the filmmaking industry rather than the book writing. Okay, so that made it a little bit more...
I think we also maybe were under the impression that if we wrote something that was too close to like anything we personally were involved in, that would be seen as like uncreative or something.
Yeah.
When it's like, so crazy. No, write what you know.
Exactly. And those were that was sort of essential to unlocking what the story would become, was like, I'm writing something I know nothing about. I'm just like, and you know, we were young and inexperienced and whatever, but you know, I don't particularly believe in whatever, a higher power guiding me, but there's a reason that this idea has not been able to leave my brain, because there's so much truth to it. And because of how much truth already exists, the only way to progress further was to lean further into that truth and just kind of write it as an analogy of my own life. But yeah, the important cruxes, the important changes were that it wasn't just like random success, like a story took off. There had to be some type of accidental malice to make one of the other characters angry at the other one. It can't just be like, you're successful and I'm not, and I'm upset about it. Because I think that's what it was. It was like, Jeremy was finding success and Alex just wasn't. Well, then Alex, you suck, is the answer, right?
And I do remember, I think, some stuff on like trying to make it a little more even. I don't think we did well at that time.
Correct.
In doing that.
Yep. But where it's at now is that the fallout comes before the success. So there is there's a thing that tears them apart as friends. Then, as they've both started to experience some type of relative success, one of the characters, we'll just say Jeremy, I guess, starts being known or has a pop with something that they wrote together. So it's like, and he claimed it as his own. And there's no like, you know, it's like their passion project that they worked on for 10 years together. Then the fallout happened And then so this character went, well, I'm not throwing this away just because we're not friends anymore. I'm going to keep chasing this. And then that's what the story is now sort of about. The filler details, I think I can tell you off air, are very important and crucial to the story. But hearing you recant that was really good for me, because A, it helps me know that it's not too far off from where we started. There's still the original inspiration. And B, it's still in your brain. Because there was a period of time, I don't know what was happening with the way that I was writing the story, but I think because Alex started to resent Jeremy, I started to resent you for not being part of the project. I don't know why.
I think maybe we initially in this process were trying to do too much in two different directions of, like, we wanted this story to have some kind of bearing on reality and feel authentic. And so you look to put yourself into it in some ways. Mm-hmm. And we did that, but then also, like, you're going off in other directions in some ways. And it feels like it, even when we were working on it together, it feels like that would kind of pull on it.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yep.
So I do know what you mean. And I can see how that could happen later on after I wasn't involved anymore.
Well, and it's also like any artist, like, when you're finding your voice, before you find your voice, and I'm surely becoming more comfortable as who David is as an artist, but, like, you know, my voice could be significantly different than you or yours, and we didn't really know what we were doing at the time in order to, like, express ourselves creatively, independently, and together. But I think this is just, you know, potentially the next phase in this rekindling or next phase of this friendship. Is because one of the last things I wrote about that I kind of crossed off was just, like, talking about, like, what it's like to cede ownership of a project, and, like, you know, something that you were working on is no longer in your hands. You got to give it off to and trust somebody else. But I think it's in the opposite direction, just like Live for Tomorrow, where I left and you were then forced to kind of carry on and tell this story by yourself. Of Gibson and Black felt very similar. And because I was like, well, Ethan's telling this story without me, I have to tell this story. So it still exists. There's definitely a script up until about halfway through the film, but there is an outline that tells the majority of the film that I'd love to go over with you.
Yeah, for sure.
Of Gibson and Black, man. Okay. Well, let's see. What else we got? I don't think I have anything on my piece of paper. Should we talk about the show again? Traverse City.
Yeah, man.
September 9th.
Yep.
As We Divide, Live for Tomorrow, Midwest Skies. I don't know how the order has been shaped up yet. It's not relevant. Show up at 5:30 and watch all fucking bands. Okay?
No, this is like when we say that we get to put on a show, like, we didn't pick a crappy opener band. Like, that's not what this is. Come to the show, see all of it.
This is all of us playing a show for you. And we're so thankful that you want to come to that show. So come to it. Okay. Hey, I love you. This wasn't quite the direct ending, and I had too many technical issues and ADHD issues to be super happy with how this episode went, but it will air and I will edit it and it will be great. You hang out on the line for just a minute. But for the listeners, thanks and stuff. I appreciate you. Be sure to check out Cat and Crew, KatAndCrew. CatandCrew.com. Enter the promo code Monday, MUNDAY, MUNDAY. You get 10% off your first purchase. Go check out Penelope, our short film, on YouTube.com/@DavidJMund. Check out Live for Tomorrow. Do you know your official YouTube page?
I think it's just Live for Tomorrow.
Because it's not.
It might still be the official LFT. I'm going to go look right now.
Nope. The official LFT was our vlog page. I don't think there's anything else.
That's it. So I think it is, but I will confirm right now.
Okay. And while he's doing that, even if you don't want to find him on YouTube.
It is, @LiveForTomorrow.
@LiveForTomorrow on YouTube. Check out Midwest Skies and As We Divide as you prepare your butts for September 9th. I love you, and I'll see you next week.